Hey, we're back here on Downtown on a Monday afternoon, 29 minutes after 4 o'clock. Time to get on the telephone line and welcome in our friend Steve Buckley from The Athletic. Buck, how are you this afternoon?
Doing great. Looking forward to talking with you. We've got a few main nuggets to discuss.
We do indeed, but I'm envious of you. I mean, it's turned out nice here. It was cloudy much of the day. The sun has broken through now, but you're out back living the dream.
Out here with the dogs and my computer and my phone and a cup of coffee, I'm very happy, yes.
Excellent, excellent. Well, let's see. Let's start with the Bruins story. You had a terrific piece in The Athletic, and your contention, I don't think, is far from wrong here that David Pastrnak may have saved Jim Montgomery's job with that OT goal.
And Jeremy Swayman, which we'll get to in a moment. But, yeah, I mean, there was a lot of criticism of Pastrnak not delivering in the postseason, and you've got Jim Montgomery. As I noted in the column, it's rare for coaches to call out star players in the 21st century. And fairly normal back in the day, you know, Leo Durocher and Dick Williams and guys like that in baseball. But he said Pastrnak's got to step up, and step up he did. And if you want to turn it around and the Bruins lose that game, you've got people wondering, well, you know, maybe he lost the room and Pastrnak is upset. And, you know, that's 2 years in a row. They blow a 3-1 series lead in the first round. And but we're not talking about that. We're talking about the Bruins playing game one, second round. And I have to believe Montgomery's safe and Pastrnak's happy and on we go.
Yeah, and one of the big reasons he's safe for now is the fact that his fellow Black Bear, Jeremy Swayman, was absolutely lights out. Who needs a rotation when you got a guy standing on his head like he was for most of the series?
Yeah, you know, I wrote in the column that Swayman, I think I said he did his old UMaine buddy Jim Montgomery a solid by coming up big in this series. And I had a line in there. I said the folks up in Orono must be screaming. And I originally wrote the folks up at Pat's Pizza, but I thought that would be showing off, and that, that would be showing off my Maine bona fides, and readers outside of Maine wouldn't have, what's Pat's Pizza? So I just changed it to Orono.
Well, you would have been absolutely correct in that, of course.
Well, I have to assume. I mean, I haven't been to Pat's Pizza in years, but I have to assume that it is still there, right? I hope.
Oh, Pat's Pizza is still there, and several other ones around the state. But the original, yes, yeah, still for many people,
yeah,
well, the heart and soul of Maine.
Me a pizza or something, because I have gone above and beyond squeezing Pat's Pizza into my prose over the years, both at the Herald and the Athletic. So I'll have to make a pilgrimage up there sometime this summer.
Well, yeah, I hope, yeah. Pizza's on me if you make it up here.
Fair enough. The youngest dog that we have that I mentioned off the air was actually born just outside of Bangor. And the very nice lady that breeds labs up there that we're very happy with, our little Sadie from Maine.
So you've got three now.
I got three. We always have three. When one goes to doggy heaven, we get another one. And this has been going on since 1996. And this is going off the rails here a bit, but I actually met an old lady out on the bike trail one night, and she said, you know, I've been watching you for years, and these three dogs of yours, they're always so healthy and good looking. And so I didn't have the heart to tell her, but it's like Menudo, you know, that we really take different dogs into the act over the years. So but I love labs.
Dogs in general are great. I was telling you, my old girl is 13. We thought about getting a younger dog to well, we say to keep her young and give her someone to hang out with if we're not home. But she is so established as the queen of the house, I'm not sure she would take it well.
We have the older dog has groused and whined in each case when we've gotten the two other younger dogs. But within a couple of months, she's rolling around the ground with them. So I can't speak to the world at large, but at this address, they all seem to get along after a while.
We're talking with Steve Buckley here on Downtown. Now, the Red Sox, yeah, tough weekend against the hottest team in baseball, but managed to win the finale yesterday. And again, I think if you'd said to a whole lot of people before the season that this team would be three games over 500 a week into May, I think folks would have been surprised.
Well, okay, so a qualifier here before I say what I'm about to say. This Red Sox team, I wrote in spring training, is going to be much better than people thought it would be. So that's Steve being smart. where Steve isn't so smart is that I had them being better than I thought they would be for all the wrong reasons, because I had major concerns about the pitching and not so many concerns about the offense. The pitching, in fact, has been really good. I don't know if that can last because they are spread thin. But for now, it's graceful baseball, and I hope that they remain relevant by the time I'm done with the Bruins and Celtics, which is sort of my main reason for living right now. But I hope there's nothing greater than Fenway in the summer when the weather is warm and the team is competitive. When they fall apart and the teams are and the games are not relevant, it just becomes a tourist place. And I love Fenway when the games mean something.
Do you think there's any way Alex Cora comes back after this season?
Yeah, that's the million-dollar question. Probably not, because he's got cachet in spite of the little Astros cheating scandal, which he copped to and took a plea and took his year off. And he goes out of his way to mention it when the topic comes up. So he disarms people. He says, I made a mistake. I paid for it. So he is back in the good graces of not just the Red Sox, but the baseball industry. And he's got a great reputation. And there will be a job out there waiting for him. And if he believes that the Red Sox are out of the star business, I mean, good heavens, you look at the mashers and the personalities and so forth they had in recent years, and they don't have that now. And maybe Alex wants to go someplace with a team that is closer to winning and so forth. And by the way, Alex hasn't ruled out the fact that he may want to go into the front office someday.
Right.
And if Breslow's going to be around for a while, which might be the case, then maybe he'll want to go someplace else where he's on a track to make that dream of his come true.
All right. Anytime you're coming on, Buck, I've got to bring up some old baseball. And I thought, I'm going to go back 50 years. And I know you weren't on the beat then because you're too young to be doing that. But that 74, the 74 Red Sox team, I was refreshing my memory on that team. And boy, it's an interesting group that I'm sure you remember well, because they had some pitching, but not a whole lot of offense. The team leader in homers that year was only 15 from Yaz and Rico Petrocelli, but they had Louis Tiant winning 22, 17 from Bill Lee, Reggie Cleveland won a dozen games, and even had an end-of-career Juan Marichal.
4-1, I believe, and then he left and wound up with, of all teams, the Dodgers at the end of his career. The 74 team, it's the failed Red Sox team that we don't talk about, but they had a seven-game lead over the Orioles late August, and then everything fell apart for that team in September. I don't have the exact record, but I just remember that I was entering my freshman year in college at UMass, and we were all excited about, because they didn't get there in 73, 72. They lost by a half game because of the schedule of Cork with the strike and the season starting late. So 74 was going to be the year, and they just got walloped in September. And I believe, I didn't do my 1974 research in anticipation of this interview, but I think they ended up in third place. That's how far back they fell. I think it was the Orioles, maybe the Tigers or the Yankees, and then the Red Sox. That was a bad. And then, of course, we did get a hint of things to come because Lynn and Rice came up in September. I think Lynn came up in late August and then Rice, and they were contributors to the offense in September. And then, of course, we all know what happened in 75.
Yeah, I remember going down to see them. It must have been in September because Lynn and Rice were in the outfield together. And I've forgotten until I started looking up the numbers here that Danny Cater was still hanging around on that 74 team.
Oh, boy, that was that's an uncomfortable notion for Sox fans, because they, of course, traded Sparky Lyle to get Cater. And everyone was saying, oh, my God, Cater's going to hit. He's got a swing made for Fenway. How many times have you heard that? Oh, this guy's got a swing made for Fenway. And, of course, he didn't do much in his time here. And Lyle went on to do great things for the Yankees and continued to have a great career. And if they had not made that trade, we have a different discussion going on.
Well, and one of the sadder stories in Red Sox history came up that year and was terrific the next season, Rogelio Moret.
Yeah, he had He went into a catatonic state after he got traded to the Rangers, I want to say.
I think so, yeah.
And he did great things to the Red Sox. A very wispy lad, tall and skinny, and could throw the heck out of the ball. And, that's a sort of a tragedy. His career just kind of ended. He may have had a cup of coffee with the Braves at some point, but he was soon out of baseball. But that's a great what might have been in Red Sox or in baseball history.
Yeah, I think he was something like 12-2 his first full season.
I want to say 14-2.
But, oh, wow. Yeah, you may be right.
I remember Mike Nagy was 12-2.
That's who I was thinking. Yes, I was confusing Mike Nagy with Rogelio Moret. You're right.
Yeah, they both had those breakout seasons. And Nagy wasn't as electrified. I think Nagy just won a lot of games and wasn't like we were frothing over his future. I think people were pretty excited, but he never did much after that. But Moret was somebody that we thought was going to be a great pitcher.
Steve Buckley with us here on Downtown. Well, you mentioned you're working on the Celtics beat as well right now as they get ready for the Cavaliers in round two. This team has done the right thing throughout much of the season, avoided the long losing streaks. Now they go into this series without Porzingis. Have they still got enough to get through this series and maybe get through the East?
I think so. And obviously the daily Porzingis updates are going to be as much newsy as the games themselves, because I think we can comfortably say they need him to win the whole thing, because, you know, Denver or whoever else awaits if they get that far. But I think they're positioned to get through Cleveland and get to the finals, and then we see what happens with Porzingis. But I read everything with a magnifying glass, and that there's nothing to lead us to believe anything. It's all cloaked in mystery, and he'll either come back and contribute and they'll win the championship maybe, or he won't and things will get a lot tougher. But it's something we're all going to be watching.
Well, he was such a great pickup, and Drew Holiday has been such a terrific addition to this team.
Well, I mean, they had to do something. They didn't have the depth and the chemistry, if you will, to get past Miami last year, which was a shock. That Game 7 blowout was disheartening. And we were all writing, oh, they got to blow it up. And to a degree, Brad Stevens did blow it up. I mean, trading Marcus Smart and getting Holiday and Porzingis and Hauser and, you know, adding to the depth, that gave the team, if you will, a sort of 07-08 look. Danny Ainge went out and got the retooled Big Three with Garnett and Ray Allen to pair them with Paul Pierce. But if you reread the clips from back then, there were questions, well, do they have depth? Do they have chemistry? Well, left unsaid at the time was, you know, Danny went out and got Eddie House and Brown, and later on, late in the season, Sam Cassell, and those were important players. And clearly the retooled Big Three is why they whacked the Lakers in that Game 6 and won the championship. But it was the overall chemistry and depth that helped that team along, and I think that's what they've got right now with this team.
By the way, Mike Nagy, 12-2 in 1969.
There we go.
Moret, I'd forgotten this. He had a couple of those seasons. 73, he went 13-2, and in 75, he was 14-3.
That's amazing. And like I said, they traded him to Texas. Was that the Ferguson Jenkins trade?
I think it was. I think you're right.
Oh, no, it wouldn't have been Jenkins because he wasn't there in 75. Maybe it was Murphy. I forget. But they traded him. And again, I'm out of my league to say this. I'm wondering if they didn't have concerns about something with him that they would trade a guy of that promise. But that would have been Dick O'Connell, and he's no longer with us. So that will be a mystery. I'm going to look that up later. I'm curious now.
Looks like maybe he went to Atlanta before he went to Texas.
Was it Atlanta and then Texas?
Yeah.
So was it Murphy, the reliever they got?
Boy, you've got me on that one. Or was it that wasn't the Tom Bergmeier trade? No.
It's like, once again, I failed to do the right research. I apologize.
Well, who knew? Who knew I was going to bring up 1974? I threw a curveball at you.
Bangor is going to be asking me about Roger Moret. I better get on that.
All right. In the meantime, that Pat's Pizza is ready whenever you want it, Buck.
I'm going to, you know, I've been, I haven't been up in Bangor in years. And I went up to Orono a while back to do a story. I was sort of in and out. But I have so many, you know, as I've told you ad nauseum, I covered the Black Bears in a variety of sports when I was at the Press Herald. So I was Watson nights at that Holiday Inn in Bangor, and that was the hotel of choice, I believe. And but a lot of times after the game, we'd all pop in a packed pizza. And they opened one later on in my last year. I think it was in Scarborough or Southport, and they opened one in Southern Maine, but I don't know if it's still there.
No, and it doesn't have they're all good. The pizza's great at all of them, but there's something about the original and the ambiance of that place.
Well, in my memory, the one in Orono was a black bear place.
Yes.
And whereas the ones in Southern Maine were just pizza places with a famous name.
Right.
You didn't walk in there thinking black bears. But when you walked into Pat's Pizza in Orono, I mean, that was headquarters for that kind of thing.
No question about that. Buck, we thank you as always. Good luck on the story you're working on, and good luck with the dog training, and we'll check in with you again soon.
It's a pleasure as always, sir. Take care.
All right. Thank you. Steve Buckley.